All right, so we'll line up callers for Howard Wasden. We've got a looks like we've got a full boat here. Skype line's open. Maybe the international line. Maybe not. Can't tell. But you'll get a chance to join in the conversation about SEAL Team 6, your questions and comments about Howard Wasden's experience as an elite Navy SEAL sniper. A week from tonight, River Monsters. They're out there. And River Monsters, the show, is one of the few shows that actually catches them. Really, it's like one of the few shows where they actually do find the things that they're going after. Sometimes not quite as big, but they get them. It's very cool. And we'll talk about that coming up next week on Coast to Coast. Also, hope you're having a great 4th of July weekend. Make sure that you play it safe. Be careful with those fireworks out there for all of those already scorched areas. We've got to try and help bring these fires under control and maybe find an alternative way to demonstrate one's patriotism. Hope for more rain next year, maybe even by the end of the summer, and get those fireworks back up again for whatever reason. But be very careful with them this weekend if you happen to be in one of those areas that it's already a tinderbox, because you don't want to have that on your conscience too. SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Bonnet. All right, so we're just, before we get into the phones, I just went back and looked at some of the quotes that came out before and, well, sorry, after the death of Osama bin Laden, but before even a lot of the details came out. And it was really clear, it seemed like, that the message was clear. They didn't want to, that it was going to be too difficult to try to get him out of there, put him on trial, and that they really had this system already set up in advance that if, you know, wink, wink, he happened to die during this operation, that they were going to be able to get him out of there, get the body buried and, you know, the ashes or dump the body dumped at sea pretty quickly. And I think that actually that's to their credit. I really don't have a problem with it. I'm not sure why people do per se, but that's why I think if you run into that, Howard, with some people talk about this being, you know, an assassination. So what if it was of Osama bin Laden?
Well, again, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but I'm telling you from a standpoint, which I think is pretty unique, that I've never seen, been involved in, or heard of an op where that was the case. I will, you know as well as I do, the House Assassination Committee was disbanded long ago, and that's not how we do business. I like your comment earlier, though, about he'd have to be standing there naked and handcuffed not to have been shot or whatever, but keep
right
in mind, until you're the one kicking in that door, going in that room, you don't know what's on the other side, and here's a man who his organization has, you know, employed IEDs countless times, so anything, a teddy bear being knocked over by this guy could have triggered the whole house coming down or a shape charge in that room. So him going in that room, if I'm behind the trigger and him doing anything besides being totally still and totally compliant, then he'd get the same thing. But getting back to the bigger question, do I have a problem if that were the case? No, I don't have a problem.
Yeah. So the fact that he was unarmed, it doesn't really bother me. I mean, I think he's proven to be too dangerous. I think the circumstances being what they are, I'm not sure why anybody would want that. If you go back in history and you could get Adolf Hitler, you know, standing by a bus, waiting for the bus, you'd take him out waiting for the bus. You don't wait for him to, if you had the chance to, you know, to prevent further death. Let's go west of the Rockies. Patrick is in Washington State for Howard Wasden, SEAL Team 6. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Patrick?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay, hey, Howard, I have not read your book, but the observation question I have for you is that since Sharia law has been adopted in England, and it's in law in England, it's being practiced, would not the 9/11 hijackers from Saudi Arabia, they're all Muslims, consider themselves a SEAL 6 team? And is us Coast audience would like to hear your opinion on, you know, the Islamic Jihad against the West.
Okay. First of all, I'm not going to give any credibility to those terrorists being elite SEAL Team 6 members. Two reasons. First of all, any idiot can strap a bomb onto themselves or fly a plane into a building. Second of all, it's not like you're defending your country. You're trying to put your message out there, which is terrorism, which is trying to get attention by causing terror and death to innocent people. The big word here, innocent people. And adopting Sharia law or whatever you're talking about in England, that's England's business. Hopefully, you know, and...
Well, let's be clear about that. Just so you know, if you don't know, that's really not what the caller really was presenting. It sounds wrong. As I understand it, what they adopted was for civil cases like divorce or financial settlements that they can bring, Muslims can bring a case to an official British court for settlement of civil cases, not for criminal cases.
Okay,
so
thanks for clearing that up, because I started to get really worried for England.
Yeah, that's a big difference. I mean, we have binding arbitration in this country that runs alongside of our legal system. And if people want to enter into a binding arbitration agreement, like the People's Court on TV, this is really all that this is, just so people know they don't get bent out of shape to thinking there's a separate court for judging criminal behavior, because that's not true.
But having said that, I did an interview with the Daily Telegraph in London, and the Archbishop of Canterbury has come out and, you know, denounced America for killing bin Laden. So in all fairness to the caller, I understand the point he's trying to make about, you know, what's fair for one, fair for the other. But the big thing to remember here is, on one hand, you've got terrorists who are trying to, you know, further their whatever jihadist cause or, you know, trying to get Palestine back or whatever they're trying to do. And then you've got people defending and supporting their country. So that's cut and dry for me.
Well, I'm not sure where the Pope or other world leaders are on the death of bin Laden, but I thought it was interesting that the Dalai Lama came out and gave it a thumbs up. So
I got the Dalai Lama behind me, I don't really care about the Archbishop of Canterbury then.
Well, he's a little cranky. First-time caller Ron is in Institute, West Virginia, on Coast to Coast for Howard Wasden. Go ahead, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you, Ian. And first of all, just a quick statement. Howard, I just want to thank you being the father of a gentleman that's in serving our country in the Army, two tours in Iraq, two tours in Afghanistan. He's making a career on behalf of himself and myself and all parents, military parents of our service men and women overseas and in our country. I'd just like to thank you so much for your defending and support of our country. God bless you, and God bless your comrades and all the men and women in arms.
Okay, you had a question for Howard?
Yeah, well, that was the statement I had.
But oh, okay.
The question is, I know you can't really go into any detail, but as you are aware, as far as it goes, the compound was entered, the building was then entered, and then the room was entered. And when the room was entered, there have been so many stories. His wife was held as a human shield. She wasn't. Blah, 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 blah. What exactly happened? as short as you can make it. What exactly happened?
I think the Pentagon has retracted that story about using his wife as a human shield. But go ahead. Do you want to comment on what really happened?
First of all, let me talk about his statement that he made earlier. I'd like to thank him. And his son, and everybody who puts on a uniform that defends this country, not just SEALs. Everybody that puts on a uniform is a hero to me, so thank you for that, and I appreciate his kind words. Secondly, what actually happened in the room, I have no insider knowledge of that at all. I will say this about what happened in the room. As I stated earlier, whatever happened in that room breached the judgmental use of deadly force protocol. He did something in that room, moved somehow in that room, wasn't totally compliant in that room, which is the reason he was killed. Otherwise, we could have done the same thing with a drone strike or a sniper shot, etc. But I think the justifiable use, the judgmental use of deadly force protocol was used, as it always was on every op I was ever on, every op I've ever heard of. I know with Hollywood and everything out there that people like to think that we've got some type of high-speed assassination committee out there or unit, but that's honestly, folks, that's not the way America does business. It's not. We go in and use, and like you said earlier, make that decision based on what that person, even this person, was doing. So I hate to tell that caller that I really don't know what happened inside that room, other than he got what he deserved based on what was happening at the time.
Well, and I think that we could ask the larger question is, does this bring about more peace? And I think in the end it does. I think even in the Muslim world, it was interesting to hear that Osama bin Laden, before his death, was going through a discussion about brand management, that Al-Qaeda's brand was ruined because it had killed too many Muslims and it wasn't gaining the kind of momentum and acceptance that he wanted it to, that it really isn't that popular, and that they were thinking of changing their name. I thought, wow, that said a lot to me right there. Well, Bill's in Philly, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for Howard Wasden. Bill?
Hello, Ian. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Wasden, thank you very much for your service to our country. You mentioned the decision is mine, and I would be interested in getting your comment on Stephen Luttrell's decision from his book, I read Lone Survivor, and his decision not taking the shot of the goat herder, and then them being able to go back and alert a larger force, which then came back and did detriment to their team. If you would have an opinion or care to comment on that.
Yeah, you do in the book, right? That's the you're talking about the same story that you've got in SEAL Team 6, aren't you?
The thing is, too, this is not a new thing, just so the caller knows. The same thing happened to a group of SAS guys from Australia during Desert Storm, which is what Ian's referring to. And you know what? That decision is a hard decision to make. I mean, thinking about whether to take someone's life is like, it's not like on television. It's you're taking everything the man's ever going to have or the person's ever going to have. So I'm not going to second guess anybody who does or doesn't do it. But the history speaks for itself. Same thing happened to the SBS or the SAS team from Australia during Desert Storm. And basically the same thing, they were discovered. They did not take out the person who discovered them, went back, got a larger force, and came back. That's decisions you have to live with or die with. I am not going to second-guess that team's not doing that. I think what happened through that team speaks for itself, and if they had to do it again, I think it might be different. But until you're sitting there in those shoes, you really don't know what you're going to do.
I'm reminded of that great conversation in the movie Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood, where the kid says, you know, that he shot a guy dead, and Clint Eastwood said, you know, it's a hell of a thing shooting a man. You take away all that he's ever had and all he's ever gonna have. And then the kid says to him, yeah, but he deserved it, didn't he? And I was like that Clint Eastwood line. He said, kid, he said he had it coming to him. And he goes, kid, we've got, all of us have it coming to us. And in a way, it sort of reflects in a battle, even when you give mercy at times like that, it may be just the wrong person to give mercy to, as it was in the case of the SAS. They were acting from a good place by giving that guy a pass, and it ended up costing them dearly.
Yes.
But they had to live in the moment. In that moment, they had to let him go, and he ends up getting more troops.
There's an old term, war is hell. I mean, that's not just a cliche. Until you've seen it, until you've been involved in it, until you've witnessed it, until you've seen the actual people involved in it, it's a hard place to project yourself to. So to make those kind of decisions like, Luttrell, and the SAS guys had to make those split-second decisions where you're trying to be the good guy, which it lends more credibility to my
Your point.
My point that, you know, that we're not just wind-up, go-ahead, trained assassins or whatever. Every SEAL that I know has got a huge heart. And not just and that's why I hate the stereotype of like, oh, you know, the assassin or whatever. Nothing could be further from the truth. These are the kindest, biggest hearted people that I know. And the fact that you'd give a kid or somebody who was innocent of the past doesn't surprise me at all.
Let's go to Mike in Kansas City on a wild card line for Howard Wasden, SEAL Team 6. Mike?
Yes, how you doing, Ian? And Howard, I want to thank you for your service in the Navy, because I'm an ex-Navy veteran. I was in the Navy in 1960, 61 through 64. And I was stationed at the Patuxent Naval Air Station there, Air Test Center. And the Navy SEALs were just starting up at that time. And they used to train right outside out of there. I don't know if you know that or if that's part of the history or not. And so that was my question. But I want to thank you for your service to the country.
So just to rephrase that question, was he aware of what you said?
I was stationed at the Naval Air Test Center in Patuxent River, Maryland.
Okay.
And the Navy SEALs were starting up at that time. It was in 61. It was after
right.
Kennedy got into
right.
office. And I want to know if he knew that was where they're, because they used to go, they had the UDT team training
right.
On the bay there.
Well, you know, so, certainly Howard's been like in a million of these bases. So is that when you served in at one point, Howard?
No, the point he's talking about is when the SEALs were first being commissioned, if he's talking 61, 62. First of all, I'd like to tell him thank you for your service too, shipmate. There's a lot of places where SEALs train. One of the original places where the old UDTs trained before, well, I mean the initial training before Buds and Coronado, was Fort Pierce. So to my knowledge, those were the two primary training bases for like the basic as you come in as a recruit type training. But there's a lot of bases around the world where you will train based on what you are doing, whether it's skydiving, diving, doing CQB runs or whatever. But there's a lot of bases that SEALs train on. But the primary base now and is way back is Coronado, California, where Buds is. And then before that, as I understand it, was Fort Pierce, Florida, which is where the Navy SEAL Museum is now.
Jack is in Michigan on a wild card line for Howard Wasden on Coast to Coast. Jack?
Great. Okay. I'm going to preface my question with a little quick review of history here, a little bit of time travel. 1967, your guest is a Navy SF, in pursuant to the previous caller. USS Liberty, 1967, was deliberately attacked, and the survivors of that attack wrote a book, and they have a website dedicated to that whole debacle,
right.
Treasonous debacle. It's called ussliberty.wordpress.com. Okay, and I want your guests to go there. Also, I want to cause attention to a Major General William Odom, previous NSA Director of Counterintelligence, who authored the book Fixing Intelligence. I want him to review a book by Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin Green Beret.
Jack, is there a question in here? I mean, I get your book list, but I always think it's kind of rude when people do that. They just tell a guest, I want you to read this, I want you to read that, I want you to read this.
No,
but you had a question? I just want to get to that, because we're running out of time here at the bottom of the hour.
Right. I just want to give a little history here, okay? Because I have SF friends who told me Osama, being a CIA operative, was a very valuable asset as a convenient boogeyman. Furthermore, on the 13th of December, 01, he was
just so I understand,
out.
You're saying Osama bin Laden was a CIA operative. That's what you're saying. I just want to make sure I understood you.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just have Howard comment on that much? Because, like I said, we're running out of time here for too much of a, air quote, history lesson. So Osama bin Laden, CIA operative, Howard Wasden, where are you with that?
You know what? There's some questions that I just have to smile and just roll my eyes at. I have no comment for CIA, for him being a CIA operative. I mean, I think it's great we live in a country where you can believe what you want to. How about that answer?
Sounds good. We'll get back to more questions and comments for SEAL Team 6, Howard Wasden, coming up next. And thank you to all the people who have been signing up for the my new Twitter feed. Richard, KJ, Eric, Rent-A-Pal, Baja Lori, Scott, Reb, Han, Adam, everybody, thank you. It's Deacon Punnett in our new Twitter feed. Now, be sending you messages about the guests as it's coming along during the week on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. I hope you're going to rock in the free world this weekend. Happy 4th of July weekend from Coast to Coast AM. And as always, 4th of July weekend or not, we got great shows coming up. You can always find out more of those by going to coasttocoastam.com. Some terrific news stories up there tonight. One that I promised earlier I was going to ask about, and I can't believe I'm just now remembering the story at coasttocoastam.com about whether or not SEAL Team 6 has these night vision contact lenses. Too cool. If they don't, they should have gotten them by now. Just since the story came out, if they didn't already have them, they should have ordered them. And where can I get them? We'll find out coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponnett. Howard Wasden, SEAL Team 6. Tell me. They've got night vision contact lenses. It's like the coolest thing on the planet.
Ian, it's 2 o'clock on the East Coast when we started this conversation, and I've had mine in the whole time we've been talking, sitting in a dark room. if there are night vision contact lenses, Ian, I know nothing about them, and have heard nothing about those. The way that light gathering works is taking something bigger than your eye, gathering more light, focusing that into your lens, and making yourself be able to see at night. So I can't see how contact lenses would effort that, but you know, with technology today, maybe they're out there and I just don't know about them.
Here's the thing. If they had them, I think they should only give them to people that can do cool stuff with them. I just don't think it, you know, if you're going to get night vision contact lenses and all you're going to use them for is to avoid stubbing your toe on the ironing board, not worth it. So if anybody should get them, it should be SEAL Team 6. Now, with stuff that's already out and known, can you tell us what kind of technology, what kind of, you know, like Q-Bond-like technology you all got before other people did, now that, you know, years have passed?
Well, I'm going to date myself here. Even when I was at SEAL Team 2, we are one of the first winter warfare teams to T&E the expeditionary weight Gore-Tex. So everybody knows what Gore-Tex is now, but
right.
We started doing the expeditionary weight Gore-Tex back in probably 87, 88 or whatever. And it was kind of a pain because you have to take this little log book with you and log everything about it, how long you wore it, if it's wicking, if it's working. So, and as you know, as I mentioned in the book, a lot of our stuff, especially at SEAL Team 6, had X behind it. Like, for example, I jumped the MT-1X parachute. Now, X doesn't mean extra special. It means experimental. So imagine putting on a high-speed parachute that's got an experimental annotation not attached to it. So sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad with having the newest, latest, and greatest. But all kidding aside, one of the great things about being in the teams and especially at SEAL Team 6 is money being no object. Being able to afford and buy the latest and greatest stuff. For example, when we got the KN250 night vision scopes, it was like a whole new realm opened up to us, you know, a whole new area of expertise.
Sure.
We're able to make longer shots at night, et cetera. And getting back pragmatically to the night vision contact lenses, be aware of this. Anytime you're using a night vision device, all you got to do to defeat that device is like have some bright light. So if you had those night vision contact lenses on and came into a bright light place, you'd have to be taking those lenses out really quick or you'd have like whiteout.
That's true. Good point. Hadn't thought of that. Or just close your eyes.
Yeah.
Well, but that would be kind of pointless. Let me go to George in California on a wild card line for Howard Wasden, SEAL Team 6. George?
Yes. First, I'd like to salute Mr. Wasden for his service. And his fallen comrades, I think they deserve it. I salute you. Second of all, you know, with the technology you guys are talking about, the night vision goggles, okay, I understand how that would work with the bright lights. But let's get to that helicopter that was used in the Bin Laden raid. Do you know anything about that helicopter and the reason why it exploded?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier, so you might have missed that. But go ahead, Howard.
Yes, I don't know about the technology for the helicopter. That's above my pay grade, as we used to say. I will tell you, as a pilot, what a helicopter does when it comes in to hover like that to put the assaulters down the fast rope. That it maintains that hover, and a lot of times you'll be in what's called ground effect, where the helicopter's hovering and ground effect is creating more lift. Looking at that compound and looking how that helicopter came in, what I think happened is that the downdraft from the rotor blades created some type of vortices by hitting the wall of the compound, which made the helicopter lose lift. Now, that's just talking about average, everyday helicopter. The technology on this helicopter, like I said, I'm not familiar with, so it could have been something way more high-tech that went wrong than that. But just looking at the helicopter, knowing how it comes in and hovers, knowing the way they come out of the helicopter on the fast ropes, if I had to guess, I would say it was something that simple. It just, for a minute, lost that lift. And when it lost that lift, it looked like the tail section probably clipped part of the wall. Otherwise, it may have just been a hard landing that didn't break the tail off.
Right. Joe is in Boston on a wild card line on Coast to Coast Howard Wasden.
Thank you. Hi, Howard. I'm a visually impaired person, Ian. I have two comments and two questions. Howard.
Well, we'll have time for one of these. We got like six people waiting to get on.
I'll go quick. I'd like to get your book if it's on tape. We could contact you. I want to thank you. I'm glad you can forgive. I can't. I'm glad the SEALs have a heart. It's the first time I heard anything good about the SEALs. I used to hear they're killing machines, and you need to help people and let people know we need people like you who are supportive. But I'd like to contact you if we ever can and how we get your book on CD if it is. That's the first thing. If I can go on, it's up to you if you have a few more.
Well, I got a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, Howard, what's that bug out thing you wanted to talk about, the blowout bag or something? Me and you mentioned that. And
the blowout kit. Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because everybody's issued it and it comes kind of standard. I thought it was interesting that this is for gunshot wounds, right? For treating emergencies.
Well, first of all, I'll tell them yes. The book is out on CD, so you can get that from Amazon. It's already out, and thank you for those words. And I'm glad that you are seeing that. You know, the teams are not just like wind up assassins or whatever. They're big hearted guys. But the blowout kit is something that's carried by each member. And it's literally to stop you from leaking, whether it's a sucking chest wound or a gunshot wound to an extremity or whatever. It's something that's uniform. It's usually carried in one place. Like, for example, on the sniper team, we used to carry ours in our right cargo pocket on our thigh. The importance of that is if I come up on somebody like I did on the streets of Mogadishu and start patching up those fallen Rangers or whoever, I knew exactly where to go to find their blowout kit. And I go to that pocket. I know what's in there. There's a 4x4 dressing. There's a petroleum-covered bandage that'll stop a sucking chest wound with some foil. So you know exactly what's going to be in there, where it's going to be located on that person's body, so you can go ahead and get to work to stop them from leaking.
Sean Penn, do the narration on your book on tape? Or
No, Sean Penn didn't do that. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the name who did do it. Name of the guy who did do it. He did a great job. I listened to it on my ride out to Colorado just to see how it went. But the guy who narrates it does a good job.
Good. Rick is in west of the Rockies in Fontana, California, on Coast to Coast. Rick?
Good evening. That's really an honor to talk with both of you. Ian, you're always very encouraging. And Howard, I really appreciate your service. My son is in Afghanistan with the Army right now. He's a medic. I listened some years back to Richard Marcinkle's book on the formation of SEAL Team 6 and some of his fictionalized novels as well concerning the team. And one that struck me, each of those members wrote a little biography about themselves, and the one that they nicknamed Cyclops, he was blind in one eye. Are you familiar with him?
I am not familiar with Cyclops. I would assume that it was a former SEAL who won the Medal of Honor, who was shot in Vietnam, and part of his side of his head was blown. I did hear something about that, but I've never heard anybody referred to as Cyclops. Now, keep in mind, I came along after the Marcinko era, so that guy probably wouldn't have been around then.
But I think that sounds like the guy you're talking about, because he's with a special allowance. He goes on to be a decorated FBI officer, right?
Sure. Well, that would be my guess, but I don't know that for a fact. I've never heard the heard that name Cyclops that
Nick,
before, but
that
I want to
before.
Tell the caller to express my thanks to his son for serving in Afghanistan.
Yep, glad to have him. It's good to think about all the people on the 4th of July weekend. Matt is in Las Vegas on Coast to Coast. Matt?
Ian and Howard, good morning. How you doing? Yeah.
Terrific.
I actually know George Knapp, did a little work in his house, and I know my whole family listens to you guys. In fact,
okay.
My mom.
Glad
anyway, I went into the Navy in 79 to become a Navy SEAL, and I cross-rated to cryptologist. But as far as some of your other callers, I like to tell the listeners, I don't care what sport you played or how big you are, 30 of us showed up for that initial test, and only 3 of us finished. And then, of course, for personal reasons, I cross-rated. The SEALs, as far as being the nasty people, you guys are the nastiest people on the face of the earth. But you are gentlemen, you are honest, you're kind, and no one would even ever know. The way you carry yourselves is fantastic. I worked with them. I did Grenada, El Salvador, and Desert Storm, and I got out in 92. And as far as the laser type things, I worked with toys 10 years before the public even had knowledge of them. So I don't know about that, Ian. However, my question is, as a cryptologist, and you can imagine the clearance that I had, I don't understand why it took 10 years to pull out a SEAL team to do this mission.
Okay. I would, first of all, thank you for your service. And when he's telling you he's a cryptologist, he was he's what we used to refer to as a secret squirrel.
Sure.
So anyway, thank you for that unique mission. I will say that our intelligence gathering capabilities had gotten to a point pre 9/11 where the CIA, and I think this is documented, wasn't allowed to do business as usual. I think we tried to get too politically correct. I think we tried to get too complacent. So I think that the reason it took us 10 years to get him is it took us that long to rebuild the infrastructure, to get the agents back in place, to get the human intelligence sources back in place so that we could actually locate the guy. And again, in all fairness, the guy was a genius in the way he hid. I mean, I heard it described as hiding in the shadow right outside the light of the candle. I mean, he's right there in Pakistan. I've heard, half a mile from their version of West Point. So as long as he keeps burning his trash inside the compound and having one goat a week delivered, you know, had we not done the interrogation and found out about the courier,
right. And
this guy may have died an old man of old age.
Yeah, I'm not sure where. I mean, I think every political group has its political correctness. I mean, anytime you're in a political group of one type or another, there's certain things you can and can't say or without becoming stigmatized. But I'm not sure how that would play into it. I think there was, if you'll pardon me, I mean, you were closer to it. But I think what we learned from the Bush administration on this was an overemphasis on technological intel and not the human, and that we had sort of thinking that somehow our technology could save us. They're just, you know, we just didn't have enough boots on the ground with people that were in disguise. I don't know if that was political correctness or just a kind of arrogance, a belief in what we could do electronically, that we ended up learning the hard way about our limitations.
And hopefully there's a lesson to be learned there, too, about relying too much on technology.
Because
a good human intel source, you know, a trusted human intel source, you know, is hard to beat.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the problem we got into with some of the intel that we had that came from one source, but we couldn't back it up from any of the others. Your point is taken that it's got to be good human intel. But yeah, I mean, I think it took a long time maybe to get the people on the ground that could actually infiltrate. And when we had that, then we had what we needed. Tony is in is east of the Rockies in Winston-Salem on Coast to Coast for Howard Wasden. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi, thank you very much. I wanted to make a comment. I'm a Marine Corps veteran of the Vietnam era, and I went through the Army Jump School along with 7 UDT guys out of UD Team 12, and my roommate Leslie Funk was the sixth Navy SEAL KIA in Vietnam.
Sorry.
And of course, there was only two of us Marines there at the Army Jump School, and I was in a reconnaissance outfit. But so in the earlier questioning and answering of you know, when the transition or the name became SEAL from UDT, I think they were, you know, doing the same thing, just like today the Marine Special the Marine Force Reconnaissance is no longer, and they stood down, and then of course the Marine Special Operations have stood up.
Right.
And they're all controlled by the Special Operations Command. Even the Marine
sure.
Corps had to relinquish the command of those guys along, and they're all the SEALs, the Rangers, the Special Forces, and Delta are all under that command
sure.
of. But you were talking.
Did you have
about
a question for? Yeah, go ahead. I just got some other people going to try and get in before the top of
okay,
the hour.
Okay, sure. So. You know, the helicopter. My son just resigned his commission as a Black Hawk pilot, and after three tours of combat, and he said that the 160th Night Stalkers are the special operations helicopters, are Black Hawks with. That can refuel in midair and all that, but they're the ones that take the operators to and from. And he said that tail rotor was a special tail rotor that was silent.
Right, right.
And that's what the was so sensitive about them
sure.
trying to get that back. And really liked your comment about the blowout kits. That's such an important item to have, along with the needle for the pneumothorax.
Right.
In addition, but thanks again, and I want to get the name of your book again, sir.
SEAL Team 6. You can't miss it. You can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. And I'm just going to move on real quickly so I can get Matt in Torrance. But thank you for your son's service. Hey, Matt.
Yeah, what's going on, Ian?
All right, for Howard Wasden, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, he's being a Navy SEAL, he would have had access to one of the, like, you know, the high generation of the night vision goggles, and I'd wondered if he'd ever, you know, at nighttime, looked into the sky with them.
Did you look into the sky with them at night?
No, never looking into the sky. Maybe the horizon if you're trying to see something approaching or whatever, but I was pretty much relegated to the night vision on my weapons.
Right.
Unless I was on a helicopter and then I had an active laser on my weapon that my night vision goggles would pick up, but no reason to look into the sky. And as a matter of fact, depending on how many stars are out or if it's a full moon, you could get brown out by doing that.
Let's get Chris on real quickly from Boston on a wild card line. Chris, you're going to make a quick entry and exit. Go ahead.
Mr. Wasden, and I didn't call you sir for a reason, you know why, because you work for a living. I will tell you this. I was an Army medic, and we only respected a couple of people other than us, and they were the Navy SEALs, whichever team, and Delta Force, and the Marine Scouts. Those were the three teams we always respected, and I want you to explain to the people on the air how you had to train, not just for the stuff you did to assault stuff, but your medic training, because I know it went way beyond what anyone will ever understand.
I wish we had time for that, but he does go into a little bit of that in the book, SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. Howard Wasden, I hope you enjoyed your time tonight, and I hope you feel good about what you've done and all the ways in which you continue to honor those people that you served with who are no longer with us in life, but with us in spirit in your book, SEAL Team 6.
Thank you, Ian. It was a pleasure.
Good. Love to have you back again sometime, and good luck with your practice in the future and your family and all of the many good years that you have ahead. Happy 4th of July, everybody. We'll see you next week for River Monsters. Deus te amat. And I do too.